Someday, men and women will rise. They will reach the mountain peak. They will meet big and strong and free, ready to receive, to partake, and to bask in the golden rays of love. What fancy, what imagination, what poetic genius can foresee the potentialities of such a force in the life of men and women? By Emma Goldman. What fancy, what imagination, what poetic genius can foresee the potentialities of such a force in the life of men and women? Today, I will talk about my involvement in the Unitarian Church and movement and how it has shaped my perspective on democracy, leadership, and decision-making, all of which are more authentic than the mainstream so-called democracy we experience in our governments. Democracy literally means government by the people, or a state or community in which government is vested in the people as a whole. I will also talk about what real democracy has to do with love. When I first started coming to the Unitarian Church of Vancouver some 12 or 13 years ago, I was content to go to services, listen to the sermons, and go home again. I wasn't sure how engaged I wanted to be in the life of the congregation. That began to change for me when a member of the Social Justice Committee invited me to a meeting. I agreed to go to the meeting, although I was still a little hesitant about dipping my toe too far into the waters of congregational life. When I showed up at that meeting, I discovered there was a leadership crisis happening in the committee. A leader from our coordinating council attended the meeting and told us that we need to have someone step up to chair the committee. And the woman sitting next to me turned to me and asked if I would co-chair the committee with her. I found myself saying yes. Diane and I became co-chairs of the newly revived committee. Several months later, she had to step down, and I found myself chairing the committee on my own for the next 3 years. After the first few months, I began learning the ropes of the church, and we'd begun to do work that was meaningful and important to me and others. And in the process, I became hooked. I was a bona fide participating member of our church. What is it that allowed me to make this transition from someone content just to attend services into a fully engaged member of our congregation? First, I was invited to participate. I felt welcome, and I felt like I was doing useful work that made a difference. Eric Walker Wickstrom, in his book, Serving with Grace, talks about the spirituality of service. We develop relationships with people who understand our UU values and commitments. And I'm quoting here, Eric says that work devoted to something greater than yourself lifts you out of the narrow sphere of individual concerns, enlarges your perspective, and provides context for the joys and concerns of your own life. It's a reality check, bringing us constantly back to the truth of our seventh principle, in which we affirm the interconnected web of all existence. No lay leader gets to act alone. It means working for and with a group of people who have intertwining needs, hopes, fears, and expectations, all to help fulfill a common mission that binds them together. What better opportunity to learn over and over again that we are mutually interdependent? Lay service means claiming your own strand of the interdependent web while honoring the needs of others. It means being a firsthand witness to the power of diversity united in a single mission. And I think I got that working with others in my congregation on issues that meant something. We felt we could make some small difference. And a satisfying part of that was, and continues to be, working with others on goals around social justice, whether that is educating ourselves and others in the congregation about issues, writing letters to elected officials, organizing all candidate meetings during elections, participating in marches and demonstrations, holding up Social Housing Now signs to the passersby, both car traffic and pedestrians, at Oak and 49th, we did yesterday and been doing on Saturdays, or participating in community-wide coalitions on anti-poverty, anti-war, housing, etc. As Unitarians, we bring a common set of values to how we address these issues, even though as individuals, we have our own perspectives and interests. And through this kind of collective work, we've strengthened relationships with one another and with members of our congregation who support our efforts and show up to events we sponsor. Although my passion was around social justice issues, when I was asked a couple years later to join the UCV board as vice president, again, I said yes. I had participated on boards previously. Serving on the board seemed like an opportunity to have a wider impact and to learn more about my community, about Unitarian Church of Vancouver. So I served for 2 years as vice president, 2 years as president, and then 3 as past president. It was a big commitment of time and energy, but I have never regretted this decision. At a recent AGM of the Unitarian Church of Vancouver, our outgoing past president commented about how positive she felt about serving on the board, even though her time on the board was much longer than she originally intended. She talked about how serving on the board changed her perspective of the church, how much she learned, and how service on the board enormously strengthened her commitment to UCV, motivating her to continue to serve in other ways. She talked about what an honor it was to have contributed so deeply to the life of the congregation. Her words rang very true. I, too, learned and gained enormously from my time on the board. And despite the hard work and long hours, it felt like a privilege to serve the community in this way. I looked around the room at that AGM and saw, among many members gathered, a number of recent presidents and board members. I suspect most of them felt similarly. Taking on this kind of leadership is very much about what Eric Walker Wickstrom said, work devoted to something greater than yourself. Choosing to walk this path of leadership is both an honor and very humbling. Making a commitment to participating, whether it's in a leadership role or in any aspect of the work of the church, in a community or a cause or organization that you care deeply about, is perhaps the most rewarding work there can be. Some of us are fortunate to have paid work that we love, where we can be ourselves and live out our values and principles. But this is too rare. Serving and participating in the democratic life of an organization, community, or congregation where we can live out our values, beliefs, and principles is not only a privilege, it is deeply fulfilling. I think this is what we discover as we commit to deeper levels of involvement in organizations and communities based on solidarity and respect. You may be thinking, as I've been talking, about some of your own experiences, democratic participation. How have you benefited? What rewards have you gained from your participation? You may also be thinking that the picture I've painted is too rosy. Sometimes it is very difficult and challenging work. Some people are easier to work with than others. And there are parts of the work that are not so fun, depending on your perspectives. Budgets, finances, difficult committees, ethical issues, and so on. What about this aspect of participating in the democratic life of a Unitarian Universalist community? Active democracy is about allowing all voices to be heard, even those we do not agree with. That's the story today. The outcome of a democratic decision is to allow the majority to prevail, but it encourages discussion and debate, putting forth arguments on various aspects of an issue. The outcome is a decision that is supported by the majority. The minority is also heard and acknowledged. While the system has flaws, the beauty of it is that all sides get heard. Issues get clarified, and decisions are made that lead to action. If we are on the winning side of the debate, this is all well and good. Our perspective prevails. But what about those who are on the other side? Jessica Purple Rodella, minister of Grand River Unitarian Congregation, shared this story with me, which illustrates the difficult side of congregational democracy. It was the fall of 1983, and the First Unitarian Church of Rochester, New York, voted by 156-1 to endorse the nuclear freeze by secret ballot. However, they all knew who the one was. She was a dear lady and a staunch Reagan-Bush conservative on such issues. It was clear that she needed a ministry from all of us who loved her, but also those people who love the nuclear freeze. Their minister, the Reverend Richard Gilbert, wrote this column for her and for the congregation. Note to a minority of one, congregational democracy can be a difficult process. While the majority have reason to feel good about the resolution supporting the nuclear freeze, this note is directed to the minority of one who opposed it. It takes courage to vote one's convictions when it is clear one is going to be a small minority. Yet it is crucial to the process that this voice be heard. The minority, even of one, reminds the majority that conscience counts for something in liberal religion. That one vote reminds us of our essential pluralism on many difficult issues of religion and politics. That voice keeps the majority from becoming arrogant and self-righteous. We needed that vote for the good of us all. Let's turn to resolutions coming to the CUC AGM this May. Participating in decision-making at our AGM concretely demonstrates our commitment to active democracy. All congregations, as Sue mentioned earlier, have received a package from the CUC about resolutions to be voted upon at the May AGM in Calgary. This year's package is rather daunting. It includes information on 7 proposed resolutions. 7. On one is CUC proposed bylaw revisions. The active democracy ones, which I'll talk about in a bit. National voice, climate change mitigation, Immigration and Refugee Protection Bill C-31. About another resolution is about new annual program contribution rate for youth and young adult members. And finally, a resolution about opposition to Enbridge. Some of these resolutions deepen our commitment to active democracy. Bylaw changes, active democracy resolutions, national voice, and program contribution rates for youth and young adults. The members of the CUC are congregations, and it's important to hear from them. And glad to see that you're starting a process here for that. Congregations should be aware of and participate in the decision-making process around these issues because they affect congregations and they affect the way we govern our national organization. The three other resolutions are about important social and environmental issues of concern to all Canadians: climate change, the Enbridge pipeline, and immigration and refugee protection. Canadian Unitarians and Universalists want to have their voices heard in important social, economic, and environmental issues, and this is an opportunity to give voice through our own democratic process to these issues. The National Voice Resolution is about the mechanisms we use as Unitarians to speak out on issues such as these. So how can congregations meaningfully participate in the resolution process of the CUC? There is a short time frame to finalize the wording of the resolutions, and all UUs are invited to give feedback to the proposers of the resolution by the end of February. And there are feedback forms on the website. On March 15th, the final wording of these resolutions will be circulated to congregations. Congregations can then decide whether they will support or not support the resolutions at the AGM. The CUC suggests congregations select their delegates to the AGM early so the delegates can participate in the process of refining of resolutions and are well informed. You may also choose to delegate responsibility within your congregation to subgroups who can review and provide feedback on particular resolutions. The Active Democracy Report, which is the outcome of a 2-year study process by the Active Democracy Study Group, contains 22 recommendations organized into 8 topic areas. And I'll just briefly touch on those 8 areas. First is about decision-making within the CUC. Recommendations deal with how the CUC consult with members about strategic priorities, the annual budget, and annual program contributions. Second resolution area is about relationships between individuals and the council, board, and staff. The third is about delegates and delegate selection. And the Active Democracy Report suggests that delegates serve for 1 or 2 year terms, that there would be the expectation of ongoing communication between the delegates and the CUC board and staff during these 2 years, and that there be suggested roles for the delegates to play in their congregation during that 2-year period. The fourth area is about promoting discussion within and among member congregations on matters going to the annual general meeting, including how we use the CUC e-news, first straw polls, and other responsive mechanisms and other means for congregations, such as CUC leaders' listserv. Fifth is about stakeholders and associate members. The results of the study group consultation made it clear that stakeholders should be given a voice at annual meetings, but not a vote. Examples of potential stakeholder groups might be directors of religious education, National Young Adults Organization, National Youth Organization, Canadian Unitarians for Social Justice. The sixth area is about electronic participation and access to the annual meeting, including that the CUC invest in hardware, software, for ongoing communication between cluster groups spread geographically across the country to allow full participation at council meetings. So you don't actually have to go to the meeting to be able to participate and vote. The seventh area of recommendation is about transparency around board officer selection and the nomination process. And then the eighth and final area of resolutions is about recommendations to the CUC board for future study groups and how they consult with UUs, organize their surveys, store information, etc. Before we come to a close, I'd like to come back to the question of what active democracy has to do with love. Let me suggest a few parallels. Both democracy and love are messy. They are not neat and tidy or predictable. Neither democracy or love are easy. While it may be easy to fall in love, to nurture a relationship requires commitment and empathy. It requires a commitment to working through issues, to communicating, and being in relationship when challenges arise. Active democracy and love both require good communication to work well. This means active listening, talking through issues, and reaching mutual understanding. Real democracy requires active participation for it to work its best. Unlike our current system of voting once every 4 years, while those in power do their best to ignore us. This doesn't work too well with love. If this is your stance, the relationship will not go too far. Both democracy and love require constant nurturing, supporting others to do their best, and deep commitment. Lastly, respect for the other is important in both love and democracy. Our first Unitarian principle is about respecting the inherent dignity and worth of every person. This is important to do both in love and for the sake of democracy. Leonard Cohen's words about democracy also sum it up. It's coming from the women and the men. Oh, baby, we'll be making love again. We'll be going down so deep, the river's going to weep, and the mountain's going to shout amen. It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway, imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA. Real love and democracy, the power of the people, are two of the most powerful forces for good in the world. Democracy and love take hard work and imagination. But hey, aren't the outcomes better?